Coming up on Simply Superior.
Simply Superior, news and issues from a superior point of view.
Everyone's your best shot.
Have you gotten your shot yet? Maybe two? If you're worried about it, we've got experts who can answer your questions.
Fire away.
Plus,
my name is Glenn Simmons, also known as Logic in Third Person. I'm a poet, educator, scientist, activist. I believe
an immunologist offers poetic wisdom and is perfectly logical. Those stories and the regional news and review after this.
The life of the dream can never be limited by that of the dreamer. And this is why I take pride in holding tight to this here dream.
Have you gotten your shot yet? Maybe two? If you're worried about it, we've got experts who can answer your questions.
Fire away!
Plus,
my name is Glenn Simmons, also known as Logic in Third Person. I'm a poet, educator, scientist, activist. I believe
an immunologist offers poetic wisdom.
The life of the dream can never be limited by that of the dreamer. And this is why I take pride in holding tight to this here dream.
Welcome to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. If you've gotten your coronavirus vaccination, or both shots of those requiring two, congratulations! That little card confirming your shots may be the hottest ticket around and even good for bragging rights. If you haven't gotten it yet, hang tight. It's on its way, even ahead of schedule. And if you're worried about it and want assurance that the preventive measure won't cause its own problems, we've got the answers for you. Glenn Simmons, Ph.D., is an immunologist on the faculty of the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth campus, and this discipline was his specialty before COVID-19. And Kathy Ronke, MPH and RN, is the health officer for the Douglas County Department of Health and Human Services. Welcome to Simply Superior, Glenn and Kathy.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
So I'll start with you, Kathy, and with the numbers. How far along are we in Douglas County, and what do you have to do to get scheduled for the vaccine if you haven't been yet?
In Wisconsin, more than 2 million vaccines have been given, that is, that people receiving at least one dose. So that is, we went from dozens to millions in a rather short amount of time. And that's about 25% of the population of Wisconsin has received at least one dose. And we're really looking at the 65 and older, the benchmark for that population. And that's over 70% now of people over 65 have received at least one dose. So that's really encouraging across the state. And when we look at Douglas County itself, over 17,000 people have received at least one dose of COVID vaccine. Within the county, and that is about 26% of the residents of Douglas County have received vaccine. And within that 65 and older population, we're almost 70% for Douglas County as well. And again, that's very encouraging, as that was sort of an important benchmark for us to be tracking in that most vulnerable population.
Sure. So what do I have to do to get one if I haven't gotten it yet?
We encourage people to call our vaccine hotline, at least for the health department vaccine. We have a phone number that we can share, 715-395-7336. And that's a number where people who are in one of the eligible categories, which now, of course, is really broad, anybody who is currently eligible can leave their name and phone number and in what way that they might be eligible by age or by the work that they do and that kind of thing. And then we take that information and we have it on a waiting list. And we've been really moving through that waiting list rather quickly. We have a couple people helping making phone calls and things like that, and we've had a lot of people who have already had the vaccine elsewhere, which we're very happy to hear that. I I feel bad for people who've been on the waiting list for, you know, a month or more waiting every day for the vaccine. So when they tell us they've already had it, that's good news to me. Also in the county, in addition to us, our pharmacies and our St. Luke's and Essentia clinics are both vaccinating as well. And so people within this area have a pretty good resources at this point. It was pretty sketchy and slim to begin with, but it's definitely becoming more easily accessible.
Right. And that number is, once again?
715-395-7336. And that's just for the health department itself. Each vaccinating entity has their own processes, so a person could call any of the other clinics or pharmacies and ask how to get on their list.
Sure. And because our listening area includes much more than Douglas County, I'm going to offer a couple more numbers. Get a pen and pencil ready. And if you can't quickly enough, I'll repeat them at the end of this segment. So here we go. For Minnesota, the statewide number for vaccination information is 833-431-2053. Again, 833-431-2053. And the website is mn.gov/vaccine. Once again, mn.gov/vaccine. For Wisconsin statewide, the number is 844-684-1064. Again, 844-684-1064. And the website is dhs.wisconsin.gov/COVID-19/vaccine-get, as in get your shot. Once again, dhs.wisconsin.gov/COVID-19/vaccine-get, as in get your shot. Glenn, any updates for those on the Minnesota side?
We have a pretty division of labor at this point, I kind of say. But on the community side, we're doing a lot to make sure that the most vulnerable populations are getting access because, you know, early on it was really tough to figure out where to go and how to make sure that you were getting the most accurate information. So organizations such as Health Equity Northland, which is a consortium of several different entities within northern Minnesota working together to make sure that information gets disseminated from the state throughout the community so that we can set up even smaller little vaccination clinics so that the individuals in the community can be informed and then be kind of ushered into those spaces more readily.
Mm-hmm. And what's the name of that group again?
Health Equity Northland. Yeah, there's a website as well, healthequitynorthland.org.
Great. Glenn, you teach this material, and Kathy, you do too, outside of the classroom. For those of us on a 101 level, how does a vaccine work? And by the way, why is it a shot?
Well, why is it a shot? So the vaccines, by and large, the simplest way to explain it is that it basically introduces a small amount of a microbe or microorganism into our bodies so that our bodies have a chance to see it and respond to it without actually getting sick. And then after that, our bodies basically have long-term defenses to keep us from getting sick if we do come in contact with that particular infectious agent later on in life. Now, the reason why it's a shot really is because the immune system is kind of present in all parts of your body in different degrees. But really in the area of the skin, just below the surface, you actually have what are known as the sentinel type of immune cells that are always kind of checking out what's going on and being fully ready and prepared to protect your body by responding to what comes into the body and immediately telling the rest of the immune system what's going on. So that's the easiest way to do it. There are other ways for your bodies to respond, but that's one of the it's one of the easiest ways to get a good immune response that helps to protect you later on.
See, that wasn't such a stupid question after all. So, and by the way, I have to say when I got mine, both of mine, they were, well, particularly the first one, the most painless shot I ever had. The second one, I felt a little bit, but the first one, you know, the guy said, what'd you think? And I thought, you did it yet? So, you know, I jumped at the chance to get it, of course, and I'm happy to say I'm all done with it. But not everyone is so enthusiastic. Without getting into the politics of it all, each of you has a particular interest in populations who have been reticent about getting vaccinated in general. Kathy, the numbers show that rural residents are among them. What are their concerns?
I think for a lot of people, it comes down to not having enough information and concerns about a vaccine that's been developed rather rapidly and just needing to have some confidence in the information that they're getting. I think that there's so much misinformation on social media, and there's just a lot of fear and anxiety. You know, this whole pandemic, everything that we've had to do in this last year has really made a lot of people feel insecure and really wanting, I think they need more information and more time to adjust to the idea of the vaccine and confidence that, you know, this is actually improving the health of our community and our ability to return to some sort of sense of normalcy by our case numbers staying down and people doing well with the vaccine. I think for some people it's just going to take a little time.
Mm-hmm. And Glenn, African Americans and other people of color have historically expressed similar skepticism. What are the roots of that?
Well, the roots of that are kind of as old as the United States is itself. There's just not a really good overall sentiment in terms of when populations of folks that are of non-European ancestry come in contact with institutions, whether it's, you know, medical, educational. There's always this underlying mistrust because of the history that's there. And so particularly with medical institutions, African Americans in particular have had some really kind of egregious ethical violations that have occurred that are well documented, and honestly, it's almost to the point where it's kind of like the go-to thing when you try to get someone of African ancestry involved in medical studies and things like that. They immediately will talk about like the Tuskegee syphilis study, and so that history is real, and so it's really hard to convince people otherwise when you have to now explain how do you forget those types of things that have happened in the relatively recent, you know, recent history. So this, I mean, some people are still alive that were around when the Tuskegee syphilis study actually occurred. So it's not as though we're talking like, you know, the 1800s. We're talking like the mid 20th century still. So we have to engage those things, and we have to understand what makes those situations different than what we're looking at now, particularly talking about the idea that we don't have enough information. Compared to most of the things medically that have been introduced to the general population here in the United States, we actually know more about these vaccines now than we know about a lot of the medications that we take currently. Even though that data is accessible, most people aren't looking for that. They're not looking for, well, how exactly does Tylenol work? You know, and what's the real mechanism of action of Robitussin? But we know all these details about how these vaccines are working. And, of course, we're still learning because it is relatively new technology. But that information is all in the forefront. It's out in the open like never before. And I think that's probably one of the things that we can kind of rest a little bit more comfortably with, is that we're getting this information, and now it's a matter of us learning how to understand what we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. And simple questions like mine about why is it a shot might help, actually. I'm wondering for both of you.
Can I say something really quick to that with the communication piece? And while I agree that we have more information, I think we've been researched to death a little bit, but it's making that information understandable to the layperson, people who are not working in healthcare and that kind of thing. You know, we can throw information sheets out at people, but the information is so technical and written at such a high level that it's really being mindful of making information understandable and giving context to what we're talking about. So it is really making it understandable, not just making information available, but making it understandable.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the COVID-19 vaccines with Glenn Simmons, an immunologist on the faculty of the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth campus, and Kathy Ronke, who is a health officer for the Douglas County Department of Health and Human Services. I'm wondering if both of your arguments, or both of you making the arguments, if part of the strategy might include just expressing to people, you know, this is worldwide, and everybody is taking this. So in each case, the rural population that might be skeptical and the African-American population that might be skeptical because of the historical precedents, does it help to say, look, everybody's doing this?
No.
Yeah, I would agree with that. This is where peer pressure is not helping.
Really?
And the reason I say that is really, you know, kind of to my colleague's point, we have to actually get into the habit of having dissemination of information in kind of digestible bits early on before the need happens. It's kind of like trying to educate, you know, a young person, a child even, how to do a certain type of mathematics, for instance. You can't throw them into calculus first off. You know, you got to do the basic adding and subtraction before you get to the more advanced things. And we're talking about something that is involving people's health and wellness. However, the basic understanding of how public health even works isn't always there. People don't understand the idea of what herd immunity really is, what it's about. And the interesting thing about that is for those who are, you know, kind of students of history, issues in public health and implementing large-scale public health initiatives have always been problematic in the United States. It's never been easy. So it's like we haven't really found the perfect formula, but definitely trying to just tell people, well, everybody's having this issue. If you're not already thinking in that sense, it doesn't really help all that much. And so you really have to deal with individuals and individual communities where they are and where their principal concerns are. And I think particularly when you're looking at either a rural or, you know, non-urban kind of a population, or even more insular populations of ethnic and racially underrepresented groups here in the United States, you have similar issues in terms of telling them that somebody else is having that issue isn't what's going to get to them. How do you make it better for where they are? That's where you start. And in the outreach that we do here and that I've done across the country, that's always been kind of the central starting point. And in community-based participatory research, we start with that community. We don't compare them to anyone else because that's the first way to be shown the exit, ultimately.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think, again, giving context is important, but also making it relatable. You know, if you have a family who has a vulnerable elderly person in the home, or maybe a vulnerable child in the home, you're going to have a very different conversation than you are with a family who has not experienced any of that and who maybe are not seeing severe outcomes and things like that coming from having COVID itself. If you have a community where people are having mild illness or asymptomatic illness and they just are not having that same experience as in a more populated area. And you know, I'm from a rural area, so I don't want to say that people in the rural areas don't believe in COVID or don't believe that vaccines are useful, because that's really not the case. But I think, you know, the sharing information with those communities is definitely, I think, different. When you have a smaller population, you are looking at, you know, relationships, and you're looking at community impact just a little bit differently than in the urban, higher populated areas. Making all of this relatable, if people who have families that have had, you know, a family member with a negative outcome, they're going to have a little bit different presence in our vaccine clinics than people who are doing it just for work and that kind of thing.
Glenn, just a minute ago, you mentioned herd immunity, which is a phrase that I'm sure most people hadn't heard of until the pandemic started. But I'm not sure everybody understands what it means. So, you know, I think we're hearing people saying, well, I'm not going to get it. I'm just going to wait for herd immunity. But getting the vaccine is part of achieving herd immunity, is it not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So herd immunity is really the concept that when you have so many people who are already immunized against a particular infectious agent, that even individuals who did not get vaccinated are also going to be protected, because the chances of transmission of that particular infectious agent, virus or bacteria, is so low that it's not likely to happen within that community. Now, there are several... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, but that doesn't mean, okay, well, I'm going to let my neighbor do it and I'm not going to do it, because if even 50% of the population said that, we wouldn't get there, right?
Right. No, absolutely. So the thing is, the more infectious a microorganism is, an infectious disease is, the higher the percentage of people that have to be protected, actively protected. And so this particular, and you know, SARS-CoV-2 or COVID-19, the virus that causes COVID-19, is highly transmissible, highly infectious, which means that you have to have a significantly high proportion of the population actively protected in order to make sure that those who are not able to get protected, those who are immune compromised in some form or fashion, are able to be protected without having to, you know, get the vaccine because they can't for some reason. That amount, I believe, is somewhere in upwards of 80% of the population. I believe it is. Now, I could be wrong. That's not my area. I'm not really the big-time epidemiologist. I can tell you all the mechanisms of the immune system, but that part, I don't know if the math has changed recently. But just based on the concept that we've explored with other diseases like polio, smallpox, and chickenpox and other things like that, we know that it's a very high number because if any significant portion of the population is not protected, that could be protected, what ends up happening is that the virus now can live. It basically finds little safe spots in these people who are able to be infected, and then they can transmit it to another person who can be actively infected, and so on and so forth. And you end up with these outbreaks, like with measles over the last few years. You have these populations of folks who are not vaccinated against measles. They get measles, and then they pass it amongst themselves, and that community becomes an active hotspot for the measles virus, which, because a lot of people don't know this or they weren't around for it, measles is actually a very deadly virus for infants and for people who are immune compromised and for older populations.
And that is a sobering reminder. All right, as promised, one more time, those numbers for vaccine information. In Minnesota, 833-431-2053. Again, 833-431-2053. And for Wisconsin statewide, 844-684-1064. Once more, 844-684-1064. We've been speaking with Glenn Simmons, an immunologist on the faculty of the University of Minnesota Medical School, Duluth campus, and Kathy Ronke, the health officer for the Douglas County Department of Health and Human Services. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Glenn, since I understand you have an interest in poetry, can you stick around for our next segment?
Sure thing.
All right. Coming up, logic in third person after this.
Eden exists somewhere between held breaths and dime store romances, between lines of love poems and two lovers held hands.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. In our last segment, Glenn Simmons joined with Kathy Ronke to teach about vaccines. In this one, we're joined by a spoken word poet who brings equal passion to teach about life in general. Logic in third person has performed around the country, including his native Florida, Nashville, Tennessee, where he attended medical college, and his current home of Duluth, Minnesota. Welcome back to Simply Superior.
Thanks for having me again.
And if that voice sounds awfully familiar and you notice I said welcome back, it's because, yes, logic in third person is the poetic alter ego of immunologist Glenn Simmons. So welcome back, Glenn, as well, if we can talk to you as two people at once.
I'll try.
So before we hear your work, which one came first, your interest in pursuing a health career or taking the mic as a poet?
I don't know. I guess before I would actually do it on purpose, I would say the science came first. The art kind of was always around, but I don't think I was willing to be in front of people for quite some time.
You know, although you teach, and that certainly entails public speaking, immunology is usually perceived as, someone with test tubes or something like that, who doesn't necessarily talk to a lot of people, and spoken word poetry is the total opposite.
Yeah, definitely a lot of talking, that's for sure.
Well, all artists probably start out with at least a day job, but not many with such an all-consuming vocation as yours. So how do you balance both of them?
Honestly, I don't. I don't balance them. They actually coexist, and they're basically the same thing, and the vocabulary just changes. Even the name that I took on was more so kind of more to my personality type than the art itself. you know, some people have like really cool names that are like, you know, it's like, yeah, you know, this is representing this or that. It's like, nope, that's just me. I'm just extremely analytical with just about everything. So even my poetry tends to have a lot of that quality to it, which makes sense because I spend almost every waking moment thinking about how I can take things apart and put them back together in real life.
Mm-hmm. And where does the name Logic in third person come from? And it is Logic, L-O-G-I-K.
Right. So Logic was an acronym. And at this point, I barely can remember what it originally stood for. The K stands for knowledge. Okay. So it's something about learning objectivity and gaining infinite knowledge. But then the third person part was really more the idea that I'm never going to really get that. I'm never going to really be objective for myself, but I'm always like that really great wingman that can help you see that situation a little bit differently. So in third person, so like when you read a book and you have that narrator that's really walking the protagonist through the story, the narrator sees everything, but the protagonist always has blind spots. And so that's how I kind of always seen myself as an artist and as a community, you know, kind of an activist type, where I'm looking at the situation as objectively as I can, but I have to be outside it to do that.
Well, I'm going to assume you were outside of this subject when you wrote it. This one is called Paradise by our guest, Logic in Third Person.
Eden exists somewhere between held breaths and dime store romance. Between lines of love poems and two lovers held hands. And in these gardens with their lush fertile soils, with ripe fruits that seem to fall right off the vine, we sit upon the base of its trees and our souls begin to dine. Upon these nourishing nectars that exude sweet scents, shielded by innocence but exploited by ignorance, this has been love's arduous journey ever since these fragile yet beautiful places began to exist. And upon its emerald lawns the serpent lies, but it isn't just to be feared and loathed, because it was a part of us, and it was in its presence that we found our nakedness and then rejected it to don our clothes, so-called reconciling our imperfections and hiding what our hearts once showed. The journey to paradise is supposed to take you all of your life, but most of us now are full grown and a little bit too full of ourselves to realize that true happiness we have never known. So with that fact, we have been thrown, scattered to the winds like seeds looking for new places to call our home. But what we're failing to realize is that this Eden exists, but it doesn't have an address. This is a place that everybody says they want to be, but very few people seek. This is a sanctuary of bliss and infinite tenderness. This is the caress of sun rays against the bare flesh. This is the passion of the last embrace and the sincerity of the first kiss. Somewhere between the physical and mental Eden can be found, not to be defined in noise it bound by conventions or pretensions. It's simply acts of ecstasy, understanding minus the misinterpretations. There is nothing more beautiful when two souls begin to resonate. But see, both must first find their understanding, which is just south of consent, which is around the corner from comprehending, but not to be mistaken for being content. Because what is contentment but a pseudonym for settlement? And settling is not an option now, nor was it then. This is simply a roadmap to help get ourselves back to our paradise and back to our Edens. Our paradise once was lost, but we should all be damned if we were ever to lose it again.
And that was Paradise by our guest, Logic in Third Person. You just told us where the name came from. When did it arise?
So the name has been around since college. But honestly, I was into research, biomedical research, early on in college. The name was probably just before I graduated, so back in 2005 or so, I think.
Mm-hmm. So I did find a poem of yours from when you were at medical college, perform with a colleague, another student.
Oh, that's Leah. She's actually an MD now. Yeah, she's a phenomenal writer. She made me feel like I couldn't write, and I mean, still to this day, she's a much better writer than I was, for sure.
Well, it helps with the collaboration, so we'll put you both on.
Absolutely, I took advantage of that, so very, very helpful to be around that kind of positive energy.
All right, let's take a listen to a part of it.
Hi, my name is Leah.
I'm Logic.
We are representing Meharry Medical College.
Imagine. What if Mother Nature was conspiring to get us out of our sleep?
To awaken us from a long forgotten sense of self.
And what if the depletion of the ozone and global warming were her methods to get our lives and minds on track? Gently pull back these protective layers, allowing the barrage of cosmic rays to blaze as they enter.
Exciting the molecular foundations of our skin.
Causing adenines to turn to guanines and proteins within them themselves into humble prostrations.
Conforming to conformational changes that lead to second messengers infiltrating cells. Unlocking DNA. Long since silenced through assimilation adopted for the sake of survival from the fields to institutionalized education. DNA fighting.
Splicing, trying to properly package its message. Its helices adding appendices to ensure that the full story gets told.
Reawakening the consciousness of souls destined for divinity. Becoming reacquainted with the reality that we were born with heartbeats that boast balance of royalty.
Every cell in our body is a piece to this puzzle. Echoing the songs of our ancestors, our hearts beat to the drum beats that resound even in this day, where history has been rewritten. Timbuktu to be forgotten. And now Athens is taking its place. Copernicus discovered heliocentricity. Yet no one recalls just how Imhotep defined space.
Each cell carries the blueprints, the kinks created by bonds, keeping locks locked, curls fixed, freeze framed perfectly in the same imprint shared by Sheba. Similar storages of melanin in the skin of hands that molded kingdoms, tinted brown bellies sheltering wombs that warmed and weathered the gestation of nations.
We need to find our way back.
And that was an excerpt from Ballads of Royalty by our guest, Logic in Third Person, a.k.a. Glenn Simmons. He was joined by his colleague, Aaliyah, when they were both students at Meharry Medical College in Nashville a few years back. He also performed it in the This Moment in Time show at the Sacred Heart Music Center in Duluth, produced by Daniel Oyinlowe at the beginning of this year. So I wanted to talk to you about your subjects. That one mentions DNA and a lot of other biological references, which sounds like it might be a connection to both of your professions.
Yeah, that one, I think that came, you know, definitely a little later in my kind of hardcore traveling poet phase. And I was actually a little almost upset that I had never really let myself go in a piece and kind of be on all sides of my proverbial coin. And so that piece was the, you know, kind of the attempt to say, like, how far can I go and really, you know, and really get into that stuff? And so I was able to do that in that piece and really to demonstrate that, I mean, there's nothing that's off limits if you can convey the message. And I feel like particularly with certain audiences that may not be scientists or may not have a certain level of education or a certain type of experience, me trying to hold back because they may not understand it, I feel like to a certain extent I can elevate people's understanding if I deliver it properly. So I may give you a new word that you've never heard before, but if the context is properly displayed and I can walk you through the story that I'm trying to tell, you can understand what I'm trying to convey. And even if it's just a conversation starter, like, hey, what was that word? What did you mean? And then you break it down and show them where you started with the word and how it actually made perfect sense. And there was no better way of using that word, not to mention if it manages to rhyme with something else later on, right? Yeah, so it was just one of those moments where I just felt like nerding out.
Well, the technique you're talking about actually was used by Dr. Martin Luther King, right? In his speeches, mm-hmm. He would throw out, for lack of a better way of putting it, big words. I think in the Mountaintop speech, he talks about Aristophanes and Socrates. The point was he was talking about going back in time and meeting some of the great philosophers. He mentioned a whole bunch of people that most of the people in the audience probably never heard of.
Right.
But the rhythm was great, and the message got across. So whether you pick that up consciously or unconsciously or independently, it's a great technique.
Yeah, we can kind of call it a convergent evolution.
There we go. Rhythm. I actually write poetry myself. Started my career, really, was poetry, which morphed into prose and journalistic writing. Early on, a cousin of mine gave me the Encyclopedia of Poetry and Poetics, and I delved into the thing. This is what happens when you give books like that to a teenager, and learned all about iambic pentameter that you read about in school, but even, you know, more esoteric things like anapestic trimeter or whatever. That made me something of a purist and sometimes force rhythms great on me. The best example, I'm going to play this, isn't in poetry or rap, but pop music. And I'm going to totally date myself. It's Fleetwood Mac, and it's exhibiting what I would say you absolutely should not do. Okay, the word is washes. It's not washes. Does that kind of butchering of the rhythm drive you crazy too?
Not necessarily, because I think sometimes it's necessary, but there are times when it's not done in a way that I can't get stuck on it. And so for me, like, most of my poetry is extremely in the realm of free verse. And so for me, my poetry is like a conversation that I'm having with one person, but there are times when you're having a conversation with someone and they say something and it just comes across weird, and then you get stuck. So they could be still talking, but then you realize, I didn't hear anything because that last word was really weird. There's an example from Seinfeld, and this is how I can show my age. I used to watch Seinfeld because I didn't have cable back in the day. actually, I still don't have cable. But there was an episode where George Costanza was saying that, hey, there's this technique for making sure that people always think about you, that you're on their mind. And it's that you leave them with like a jingle. You know, like you leave the room on this note. Your name or whatever you say will stick. And so he would leave a room, and the last thing he would say would be his last name in this particular rhythm. Costanza.
I'm like a commercial jingle. At first it's a little irritating, then you hear it a few times, you're humming it in the shower. By the third date, it's by Menon.
Costanza.
Right? And that's how I think about it. So like you said, when you're forcing the meter to a certain extent, when you're making a syllable that should not be that harsh, you better have a really good reason for it, and not just so you can fit something. It has to be like there's a point in it, or there's a double entendre in there somewhere. But if not, don't. So yeah, I guess it does get on my nerves a little bit.
I thought it did, because you don't do that. And if you do it, I hear you. It's intentional. Well, that's the entire point, as George Costanza would remind us. We are speaking with Logic in Third Person, a spoken word artist from Duluth who has performed around the country. You don't advocate misogyny or vulgarity, or certainly you don't advocate it, but you don't use it. I don't think I even hear you swear very much. Why not? If part of poetry is real, that's the excuse, if you will, that people who do engage in that kind of behavior say. So why be clean? I guess the question is usually the opposite, but
yeah,
I ask you this.
I would say this. I'm not clean in my writing. That is not my go-to. I don't avoid it. And even when I teach writing, so I coached Poetry Slam for several years for the Mid-South Poetry Slam team. So they compete at the International Poetry Festival. And the one thing I always told my team when we work together, if you have to drop any four-letter words, you know, use any profanity, you better have a good reason. So the same thing I said just a moment ago, it has to have a function. Because for when you're writing, if you do anything that disrupts the flow of the person listening, so it's not really the flow of the words, it's the flow of the listener, because the listener is almighty in performance poetry, you know, and especially when you do slam poetry, like, the judges are going to give me a score, and that score will determine whether I walk home with with money in my pocket or if I'm going to have to go bus tables or something, right? And if you drop an F-bomb in the middle of a sentence, unless it's the expectation that it's going to come, then you create that break. And that psychic link is gone, and now you no longer have the audience on the ride with you, and they're now trying to evaluate whether they want to keep listening.
Well, we'll certainly keep listening, and we'll have you take us out with a poem about poetry, Raider Intro. Logic in Third Person and Glenn Simmons, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
In a remote location between the ghettos and the jungles, these magnifiers of sound, these amplifiers of the art, these poets reside somewhere between truth and lying. And through their lines, they've been searching for themselves, but seldom are they finding anything that could bear resemblance to something that has already been heaven sent. So now I am just praying that my message at least has some relevance. Because from time to time I have come to realize how my words have been acting a little too promiscuous, casually flirting with disaster, having one-night stand romances with no regards for long-term plans, leaving me checking into these walk-in clinics for what is commonly referred to as verbal incontinence. But I call it freestyle, simply because I can't hold my shit in longer than I hold my breath. I open up floodgates and allow my words to flow until I have none left. As a child, I remember asking my mother if I was born to be the best, and she replied, if I was prepared to die, then the answer was inevitably yes. I want to be like Paul and be revered, becoming a wordsmith so that my imagery can reside in the spaces between your ears, intimately engaging your minds, channeling chakras, releasing tensions, hell, even stopping time. So happily together, my words and your spirits eventually get married, never coming down from our highs like Calgon, we get carried, away to where dreams can grow and ideas are their babies. These are the verbal calisthenics for those who eat dictionaries for breakfast. This is literally warfare with words, so protect your necks and wear your helmets. This is the resurrection of the art. This is the principle, power, purpose. This is the definition of poetry.
Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and I'm joined by Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Hello, Brooks.
Hey, Robin.
And our own Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio, Danielle Kading. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Kathy Ronke of the Douglas County Health and Human Services Department just told us one lesson of the pandemic is to be able to get information to people who don't have a computer. Yet even if you do, it won't do any good in some parts of our listening area because you can't get a signal. What's the latest on getting broadband out there, at least in part of the region?
Well, in Superior, officials have been exploring building a city-owned fiber network to provide high-speed internet. And the city has been moving forward with that because they say that residents have been paying too much for mediocre internet access. And so what this would do is the city would explore installation of fiber infrastructure that could be used by multiple internet service providers. And so in that sense, it would potentially create competition and hopefully lower prices for residents. The city's consultant, Entry Point Networks, has been looking into this, and they say that they could save people, you know, from going from an average of about $80 or so more a month down to $55 a month for homes and $75 for businesses at 10 times the speed. So going from like 100 megabits upload to 1,000 megabits upload and 1,000 megabits download, which is a pretty good internet speed. But it's drawing some sticker shock from some city council members who are afraid about the price tag associated with it. You know, it could entail bonding about $31 million, but Superior's Mayor Jim Payne has said that they don't expect that to actually be the case, that they would not really consider that, that they're looking for a lot of federal funding and potentially could be supported in part with funding through the COVID-19 relief that's coming down.
Well, that makes sense, since one of the reasons that we're talking about this is to get information out on COVID-19. Everything has a price tag. And moving up to Ashland County, the officials there want to get the public's input on some pricey issues.
Yeah, they are looking to ask voters in the spring election whether they would be willing to raise property taxes by nearly $1 million each year for the next 5 years, because they say that the county has reached what they call a fiscal crisis. So they're putting this referendum before voters in the April election, and they held a listening session this week to gauge people's input about whether or not they would support this. And they got some questions from people about whether any of that COVID-19 relief money that's coming to local governments could be used to help fix their budget problems. But that money has restrictions on it where it needs to be used for the COVID-19 emergency. So that could go to like aid to small businesses and industries like tourism and hospitality. And so Ashland County's Administrator Clark Schroeder is saying that they're in a tough spot and they really need to raise this money. Otherwise, they're going to have to start cutting services that they're not required to fund by state law. And that would include things like services provided through the Ashland County Aging Unit, the Bay Area Rural Transit, which provides public transit in the area. And officials with those nonprofits or agencies are really concerned about that, including Jay Mathias, the executive director of the Ashland County Aging Unit. She said that a reduction in funding would decrease the overall meals and cause them to close meal sites for seniors and put them on a waiting list. So she's afraid that seniors might go hungry if the county moves forward with that option, should this referendum fail.
Mm-hmm. Well, I didn't hear wetland restoration as part of that laundry list of services that the government might provide, but the Audubon Society isn't waiting for that to happen.
No, they issued a report this week outlining their plan to restore and protect a dozen areas across the Great Lakes that would support Great Lakes birds. And, you know, the region is home to 350 bird species, and, you know, marsh birds in particular are a great indicator species for the health of coastal wetlands, which not only benefit these bird species, but also people living around these areas, because they serve important functions by providing flood protection and they filter out pollutants. And so they're proposing, I believe it's 42 projects in 12 sites across the Great Lakes, and that includes the St. Louis River Estuary and Green Bay. And, you know, one of the largest projects they've proposed or prioritized in the estuary seeks to restore about 850 acres of marsh in Alois Bay in Superior that would support the black tern, which hasn't been seen in the St. Louis River estuary since the 1990s. So they're moving forward with this plan and trying to work with partners who are already working on restoration and also seeking funding through the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative to help fund some of these efforts.
All right. Well, this Robin will keep his eyes out for the black tern. Brooks, while we're talking about watery places, there's a surfer who made some waves on the big lake this week.
Yeah, what could have been a tragic story ended up being one of heroism on Wednesday after a 26-year-old Minneapolis man who drove up to Duluth to surf the big waves this week. He was in the right place at the right time when a woman approached him and said, you know, can you please help? My dog went over the pier. My health aide went over after him, and both of them are having trouble getting out. He dropped his surfboard. He was about to jump in for one more wave heading off of the ship canal, and he jumped in and was able to pull both the 29-year-old man and the dog to safety. Police and fire officials say that, you know, if he hadn't been there, this could have been a much different story. The surfer, Darby Vokes, he said he was an amateur surfer, but, you know, he's also run Ironman challenges. So definitely grateful that he was there and he was able to use the skills he's honed over time. No injuries were reported. You know, they were treated for potential hypothermia. The lake is still about 33 degrees despite the lack of ice, and the waves were just extreme. So if you take a look at the harbor cam, you can kind of make out the rescue happening as it was ongoing, just on the Park Point side of the Duluth Ship Canal.
Wow. And if you want a good place to view rescues like that, or better, the lake when nobody needs to be saved, you can head back to the Lake Walk on Canal Park.
Yeah, good news for folks who actually like walking around a finished path and not just that dearth carriage trail around Canal Park. The Lake Walk is finishing up a $16 million renovation and expansion after storm damaged it back in 2017 and 2018. So right now, there's still a fence up. There's still some work to be done. Folks have been getting around the fence and walking on the nearly complete trail. Please don't do that. But by Grandma's Marathon, by mid-June, we should be able to get out on that beautiful stretch of waterfront, which has been reinforced with massive boulders to prevent more storms from upturning the boardwalk and the asphalt in the years to come.
All right. And finally, you have a story that's going to neatly tie together everything we've been talking about, telling us about how the vaccination rollout is affecting tourism.
Yeah, we figured that there would be some sort of increase, in interest in heading up north this on the North Shore this spring and summer. And lo and behold, we're hearing that advanced bookings are way up, especially among those 65 and older. Those who are getting their vaccine, they're trying to get their life back to normal. And so North Shore resorts are seeing, a sustained interest in taking vacations that harkens back to, pre-pandemic times when they'd be booked out every week and weekend throughout the summer. Restaurants are seeing it too, and so far, that interest is moving past Duluth. We're still at very low hotel occupancy rates, especially during the week, because, business travel and conferences have yet to resume. Once that really kicks in, that's, I think, the real return to normal folks are waiting. But until then, you're getting a lot of folks still taking driving distance vacations, which for, a lot of folks is the North Shore and the South Shore.
Okay. We've been speaking with Danielle Kading, the Superior-based reporter for WPR News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
And Brooks Johnson of the Star Tribune's North Report team. Thank you, Brooks.
Thanks so much, Robin.
You can read the stories by Brooks and the Star Tribune's entire Twin Ports Bureau at www.startribune.com/northreport and be sure to subscribe to their local newsletter. Next week on Simply Superior. Did we just talk about wetlands and the lake? What do you do when that wetland is your basement? We'll hear from two stormwater experts from Superior and Duluth, cities right next to each other, but with very different topographies, on where that spring shower water is supposed to go. That's it for this edition of Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington. We leave you with more of the poetry of logic in third person. Stay safe, everyone.
We've got to move on. We've got to get strong because we are the children of ancestors. The sweat blood with broken backs that built this nation. And they were always looking forward toward the future that would be full of the hope that our present should have brought us. But we have squandered our gifts. We've been so busy leaning and rocking that no one is at home raising our children. And so at that point, the system wins and we all gonna get done in if we don't learn to. If we don't yearn to change all of our mental conditions.